Yeah.
We pond it that way.
Yeah.
Forward back.
Yeah. That's good. Thank you very much.
Good morning and welcome to you all. I'll just ask you to introduce yourselves in a minute, but before I do that, just to let you know, we've read the original submission, thanks very much for putting that in, and we've also read the 49-page brief of evidence that you supplied with all the helpful pictures and information in there, so that obviously took you a lot of time and we do appreciate that. You don't need to read that to us because we've already read it, but you're very welcome to speak to it, highlight key points, and so introduce yourselves to us and then tell us what you need to tell us this morning.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm sorry, I'm not that well today. excuse me. Thank you for taking the time to read our submission and supporting evidence and giving us the opportunity to speak. We all intend to speak, if that's okay, and I don't know if you want to question us when we're finished or one at a time, that's entirely up to you.
Probably at the end, in case a question we had in mind might be answered by someone else.
Yes. We're on the coast between Riverton and Tuatapere on Pāhi Point, so we stick out into the sea over Strait. Our property's mainly flat. We've been almost completely zoned peat wetlands. Of our 380 hectares, over 80% of that has been zoned as peat wetlands. And probably our dwelling and buildings are sitting on what hasn't been zoned, is that. I've already given you an outline of our farming and our family history. I assume you've read all that.
Yep.
And I've also written down much of what I wanted to say because I'm quite a nervous speaker. So the main points I'd like to cover today are physiographic zones. I do not believe that physiographic zoning is accurate enough to be included in the plan. It's not precise enough at farm level to be used as a regulatory tool. These are regional scale models, and although they're useful, they should not be used at a farm scale level to regulate land use into the future. I hope the evidence we provide today with regards to our property shows that physiographics are not 100% correct, and if they're wrong on even one farm, that is one farm too many. When you consider the potential loss of income and property devaluation. I see that you referred to our submission in the 42A report with regards to our concerns around dairy expansion on peat wetlands and the intensive grazing constructions that you're putting on peat wetlands. I appreciate that these have been looked at in the 42A report and that they are being addressed and considered. I appreciate that very much. I believe that land use should be considered at a catchment level so that solutions are tailored to each individual waterway. For example, imposing regulations on us based on physiographics will not help the issues being faced at Wendonside, Balfour and Waituna Lagoon. Our catchment is unique and should be treated as such. I think that the existing resource consent process around new dairy farming should be made robust enough to maintain water quality in each catchment. And these rules should be tailored to each catchment to give the best outcome for their waterway. One size does not fit all. Each area has its own issues. I'm not standing in front of you today and saying that our farm or our farming methods are perfect, but we're willing to do everything in our power to enhance water quality in our area. High-risk areas should be gauged by water testing data, not physiographics. We have formed a catchment group in our area and it has been very well supported. Chris is the chairman and I'm the secretary. We rang over 40 farmers to attend our first catchment group meeting. Now, they all turned up, bar two or three, and they brought along other people that we hadn't rung. A lot of them haven't submitted and won't be speaking, and they include dairy farmers and sheep farmers. I think the notified plan is short-sighted and has little regard for future farming developments, possible land use change, and ongoing research and development. It seems to me that dairying has been highlighted. I think you're closing the door after the horse has bolted. What about other intensification? Can we convert our property to horticulture or sheep milking? Perhaps some zones with high nitrogen leaching problems should be excluded from horticulture. If this plan is to serve us well, it needs to have improving water quality as its focus and be open to the constantly changing face of farming. The next big change. Or is it the intention of the council that only dairy farmers will be able to convert to horticulture, as only they will have a high enough nutrient limit? If sheep farmers are to be the kidneys of the province, then we deserve compensation for that. I support solutions for individual waterways at catchment level, where data, water testing data, can prove that a difference is being made. I'm pleased that the 42A report has recommended 50 hectares of intensive winter grazing be allowed across all zones. However, I still believe that a percentage limit offers the best protection for the environment. We're going for 15%. I think we've already shot ourselves in the foot by reducing our amount of winter grazing this year, because we thought we had to operate under 20 hectares. Other farmers are possibly increasing nutrient use to gain the most benefit from the limit setting process. With the drawn out nature of this submission process, perhaps you should consider going back 5 years when looking at setting nutrient limits. Because again, we all want the environment and water quality to be the winner here. Appendix N, I support FEPs and believe that intensive winter grazing, riparian fencing and planting can all be covered in your plan without the need for resource consents. I believe these can be developed and monitored through local catchment groups supported by ES Land Sustainability Officers. I think it could be done on a waterway by waterway basis, starting with those most at risk. Let's make individual plans for saving waterways and involve everyone along that waterway. I concede that FEPs will need to be regularly audited by Environment Southland for them to be effective in place of regulation. To me, it seems we make our own plans rather than have. To me, it means we would be able to make our own plans rather than have regulations imposed on us. I oppose the definition of peat wetlands, as there is no consideration of developmental status within the zone. And I just want to about page 142 of the 42A report, you noted that Coast Haven Farms and Patterson Guevara Trust requested that the developmental status and range of soils within the zone be acknowledged, particularly with regard to pea retention, organic matter and other soil defining characteristics. In addition, the submitter would like the plan to consider and acknowledge coastal properties which drain to the ocean rather than to a lagoon, tidal estuary, river or lake. And I have read the analysis there. Stock exclusion. Even though we have fenced off most of our waterways, sheep actually work quite well on our creek banks, as the creeks are so narrow and shallow that the grass grows and stops water flow. In the summer they did eat it down before they were fenced out. During a heavy rain event, those overgrown banks, they're eroded when the water comes down. Again, solutions at a catchment level with the best outcomes for the local waterways. The waterways on our property are not tributaries that flow into large waterways. They begin in the nearest area of high bush and flow straight to the sea. We can jump, or I used to be able to, jump from one side to the other of our creeks. I fail to see how imposing land use restrictions on future generations of farmers on our property will improve water quality over the province. Thank you, that's all I have to say.
Okay. We'll just roll through the rest of our presentations and we'll take questions at the end.
Yep, I'm Gavin Patterson. I can tell you this isn't my forte. I'd rather be at home on the farm. Working, but I'm here today because I'm passionate about our farm and farming operation, and I feel I have to speak to make a change to the notified plan for the ease of farming in the future on our farm. I believe that instead of a whole lot of rules and consents, you give farmers environmental advice through field days and sustainability officer visits to farm, farmers will take this on board and make changes. Intensive winter grazing. I like to be proactive and plan 3 to 6 months out, hence at an Orapiki catchment group field day, I requested a consent person to come out and explain what was involved. The main reason for this was consents from May 2018 were needed under the notified water and land plan, and since ploughing starts in October, consents needed to be done. Environment staff that were present informed us that it was status quo was going to be maintained on consents until the plan was as operational. It was good to see common sense prevail. It did leave me wondering about the 80,000 worth of heifer grazing we missed out on to work in with the 20 hectare crop on peat wetlands. You can see from the photo evidence how we manage intensive winter grazing and also our fenced off creeks. We support good management practices when intensive winter grazing on crop. We are trialling direct drilling oats as a catch crop into our 17 hectares of eaten off brassica paddocks this year, and we've got half them in, but the weather patterns have changed recently. And I think the next major thing to do on our farm will be water testing coming into our property and going out, so we know what we're dealing with, or know what we have to fix if it is broken. And subsurface drains, I'll just state this again, that I request that the Rule 23 is maintained as notified in the plan. I disagree with the recommendations in the 42A report to map all existing drains. That's my lot.
Okay.
Good morning, Commissioners and Councillors. Thanks for taking the time to read our submission. My name's Chris Patterson, and I'm the son of Gavin and Barbara, and I've just recently moved back to the family farm and brought an interest in to the family farm. My family, my wife and two kids has literally moved out too. Obviously, so my parents have already spoken on much of our submission in terms of how various things can affect us around winter grazing, etc. I just wanted to touch on a few technical points around the physiographic zones and how they relate to our operation and on our farm. So what was stated in our submission, we oppose the use of physiographic zoning as a literature tool, and we still have this viewpoint. While we agree with the concept of physiographic zones, we believe that they should remain outside the plan due to the large inaccuracies on some individual farms, essentially allowing for easier amendments without the need for large plan changes going forward if there is found to be dramatic inaccuracies in those zones. It's disappointing that this was not a recommendation seen in the Section 42A report. Our situation, this is an issue on our farm in particular. 83% approximately of our farms being, of our 380 hectare farm has been zoned as peat wetland. This would be no surprise due to the soil types that we have been, they've gone into determining those zones, mainly the topoclimate soils, where 67% of our soils are actually classed as organic. I've done, I should probably say now that I've been, to Lincoln University, and also work for Balance as a nutrient specialist. I've pulled on a wee bit of my my knowledge to actually delve into things a wee bit further. So I've done a bit of an investigation around, I've taken, and these are all in their, obviously in their submission. So I've taken photos of the soil, and from my opinion, they don't look like peat soil. I've tested properties of their soil, analysed storage capacity, organic matter, and they go against the characteristics of typical peat soil and have a high anion storage capacity and a low to medium organic matter and carbon content. And I've also had our soil on our farm remapped by Jim Riss from Balanced Agri-Nutrients, who also did a lot of the soil test, soil mapping for the type of climate stuff. So he's done that on a farm level for us, and this has also got his expert statement in his submission. I just wanted to highlight a particular result that we got from that. And I reckon it's best shown on a graph like this. So we've got our type of climate soils. Currently, the map is about 65% organic soils and 35% sedimentary soil. And clearly dominantly made up by the Colac soil, which is classed as a organic soil. When we had our farm remapped, that literally changed the landscape, the soils on our farm dramatically, and has gone from literally down to 10% organic soil on our farm and up to 90% sedimentary soil. So I think that was a key point just to raise that soil mapping. Getting that accuracy right has actually changed, it hasn't changed anything on our farm, but physically, but on classification, potentially. And also, just to add a bit of visual context to this, and again, I'll just skim over these because they are all in the thing. All of these pictures of soil profiles and soils have all been mapped, were all mapped as organic. Organic, quite an interesting one on the left. Organic, again, we mapped as organic, and this was mapped organic in the type of climate stuff, I should reiterate. And a couple of seedbed presentations of some organic soil, I think that was all I needed to, yeah. One, we're aware that soil type only makes up a part of the determination of a physiographic zone. In the case of peat wetlands, it's quite a significant one. From what I've read about the zone, about the zoning rules and how they're made up, organic soil essentially automatically puts into peat wetland. Furthermore, if the soil type of our farm is more of a mineral or sedimentary origin, then underlying geology and redox potential also goes into the determination of the zone, could also lead them towards it actually being another zone. The peat wetland definition, we also oppose the definition of the peat wetland, and Mum touched on this briefly as well, because no account has been given for the development status of peat soils. Developed peat has essentially been up them with raw peat bog. There's no differentiation of the two. Peat retention will improve over time on peat soil as it develops, and it's commonly used as a measure of development status of peat soils is because it goes up as the mineral content of the soil increases as it develops further. In some cases, depending on other factors such as geology, redox potential, and there may be some areas of mineral soil which possibly would be included in peat wetland zone. It's surprising to me that if this is the case, that there's no differentiation in the zone to account for this. Other zones have variants to account for different loss pathways. This is especially important for peat retention, as there are likely to be quite different anion storage levels for organic versus sedimentary. You're talking very low of around 10% for organic, versus a high for sedimentary of 60-90%. And the information provided by ES on the peat wetland zone, the leaching of pea through the soil due to low pea retention, is a key loss pathway. This may happen on peat soil, but is unlikely to leach directly through the soil profile on sedimentary soil because of that high pea retention. I recommend that the definition of this zone be reviewed, and a sedimentary soil variant be added in to account for this, because it's such a key loss pathway. This variant of the peat wetland could potentially be quite a favourable one if you take into the account the denitrification ability of peat wetland zones for nitrogen, and having the sedimentary aspect in there, removing the peat leaching problem. I strongly believe that it is critical that if physiographic zones will be used in any way, they need to be correct. The inaccuracies I've shown are just the ones we've found in our own farm. And from reading many other submissions, there seems to be many other cases on, and I know of a lot more that have not submitted, that also have not been submitted on. Just one last point on my drilling down between the two was I'd also take my analysis a step further and actually did a nutrient budget for both soil maps, and that's all in there.
Yeah.
With over 20 blocks and a diverse range of stock types and enterprises on their farm, this was no easy feat. It took close to 10 hours to complete both these, and in my line of work I have done quite a few of them. Just some main points, I suppose. The end loss was the same between both lots of soil maps, but however the P loss, and I'll come back to the P loss again, shows some very large differences. And I just want to reiterate on this table here. Again, it's just a summarised version of what you guys already have. But the P loss per the annual P loss was 409 on the type of climate map soils. On the remapped soils, it was 252, and that, yeah, and so per hectare that was 1.1 versus 0.7. So there's a dramatic drop off just by getting the soil types correct. And then if you take it down to a block level, you can kind of see why the TY soil is a much lower P loss than compared to colic. So if you've changed your amounts of each soil, then you're going to have that shift. Yes, that's pretty much all I wanted to really get. Yeah.
So the detailed notes you were reading from, are you happy to leave those behind so we can get a copy of those?
Yes, no, that's fine. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
There's a lot of technical information there, which is we'd probably want to go back and have another look at. So
yeah, no, that's cool. That's right.
You leave it with one
I
of
tried
the,
to take most of the other thing, but I'll leave that for you.
Yeah, great. I'll just think. So
thank you very much for listening.
Okay, so we go to questions. Lord, can we start again?
Yeah, I'm actually quite happy what you presented. I think to get a copy of the what you've read from would be very good, and you made your points very clear, so I'm happy with that, and thank you for your presentation.
Is it all right if I just I'll email it to the policy team, and because I've got scribbles and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to see you secret.
Yeah. I've got no questions. Very good presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, very good presentation. I think you said that you restricted your crop, winter feed crop, to 20 hectares this winter?
No, we've still got 24 hectares, but we were grazing two lots of dairy heifers, but we have them on for 2 years, so this coming winter the R2s would be still there, so we got rid of one herb also, or you know, so
and you'll appreciate in doing that we've had to purchase capital stock.
Yeah, so
beef. We're starting to look at other options things we can do. We went to a field day on Monday, which showed us some pretty interesting new ideas. Really receptive to new ideas. I think one big thing we just want to convey to you is that these physiographics stand as they are, and they can't be challenged. If we're expected to do our farm environment plan based on incorrect soil types and incorrect information, then we won't get the right outcome, and the environment's not a winner in that case. If nutrient budgets and plans are to be done, information going into anything is only, what comes out is only as good as what you put in.
Yeah, thanks for the very comprehensive information on the physiographics matter.
Thank you. Yes, three questions. You mentioned that instead of using the physiographic zones, that you could use some sort of water testing program. Can you elaborate on that and describe what kind of water testing program you think would be suitable in your situation?
I felt I had to give some thought to an alternative. If we thought that physiographics couldn't be used to highlight high-risk areas, and that was what I could come up with. If there's a high-risk area with water testing data, you must be already testing. You must know where the problems are around Southland. Then perhaps the water testing data, everybody in that catchment, that's their, I know it's not a physiographic, but that's their thing, if you know what I mean. Mm. We can't do anything on our farm to alter the Aparima River or the Riverton Estuary.
No.
Nothing we do on our property, and yet we're in that, but nothing we do on our property will alter that. It seems as that it's one of these, I don't want the plan to turn out to be one of these pieces of paper that gets filled out, ticked off, tick, 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 put away in a box and everybody complies, and at the end of the day, will water quality actually be, will the environment be the winner?
Mm.
Shouldn't this plan be focusing on actually improving water quality and making sure that the right information is used to do that?
Yeah, no, that's right. What I was trying to, because you have got all these little separate streams that go directly to the sea and they're not part of a bigger catchment, I was wondering, you know, if you were going to do that, how would you undertake a water testing regime that would be able to provide assurance that what was happening wasn't causing a deterioration in water quality as the plan sets out?
I guess you need to build up data over time. Yeah. I'm aware that one water test won't suffice.
No.
And you test that, I suppose in our case, we test it from where it leaves the bush, point it enters each farm, at the point it leaves each farm.
And is that something you think would be reasonable for people like you to do?
I think catchment groups could achieve that.
Yeah.
With support from Environment Southland,
yeah,
and with
it is one common theme that does come up in one of their catchment group meetings.
Yeah.
And some farmers probably, there's obviously water testing and there's making sure it's been done.
They feel as though they're owning the problem then.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think Paul Marshall alluded before, you're always going to have the ratbags in the industry. I acknowledge that, and that's will be Environment Southland's job to police that and make sure those people come on board, and there'll be a certain amount of that, I'm sure you won't avoid it.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, that's good, thank you. And the other thing is about the soil types on your property. You've provided us with the most detail of anybody, even though lots of people have said, you know, we don't think we've got this or that, even though the physiographic zones have said so, but you've done a great deal of work to go through, even from the topoclimate maps, you know, and that's just very...
Yeah.
It's very good that you've done that, and you've obviously got the technical skill to do it. Not everybody's got that.
Yeah.
So my question really is, if you were to do a farm management plan, or if anybody was to do a farm management plan, and they thought that the physiographics were wrong, how practical is it, or how could it be achieved, who would pay for it, all that sort of thing, to actually go through and correct it so that people could predict more in combination with the water